Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going good. Fantastic.
So, my prediction was correct.
That we would get snow in December?
I said it would be nice up until the end of November, and then come December.
Sir, it's easy to brag about it afterwards, and then you would not even be mentioning it if we got snow in November.
Yeah, I would. I got that one wrong.
You did get it wrong because Bracebridge got nailed. 140 centimeters. That's an incredible amount. People were stuck on Highway 11.
Said. They were going to get snow at the end of November, December.
Highway 11 was closed, and people were stuck on Highway 11 for 16 hours.
Trying to get to work.
Well, I don't know if they're trying to get to work. They're trying to get somewhere.
Well, I would claim I was trying to get to work, so maybe I'd still get paid for the day.
Yeah, that's nuts. No food, no water. I imagine you could melt some snow. It made me think I should have like some of those freeze-dried noodle packs in my trunk or something.
Do you not have a safety kit in your car?
I do have a safety kit, but it's an emergency safety kit. It doesn't have food in it.
Well, I mean, down here you really wouldn't. But if you're heading north.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always pack a bag of food. Because apparently eating the passengers in your vehicle is frowned upon.
Yeah.
Yeah, just get a fire started outside your car. Invite the people from the other car. Or it's grandma. She wasn't going to be around long anyway.
Got some people at work. They're all heading north for a week for work. And so they're going up towards the Timmins area. And so I've been dropping in, talking to them about it, you know, yada, 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 telling them what apps to download for traveling and weather. And because all the weather is like, this is, everybody's getting hit, right? Mm-hmm. Especially up near Timmins. So they, I heard them talk, okay, well, you're going to bring the emergency kit with like food and blankets, and I'll bring this, and the other guy's going to bring water bottles. And
they're packing for a 20-day adventure.
Well, the three of them are going to carpool together, and they're heading up north. And
for how long?
For a week. We're supporting, at work, we're supporting, it's like a trades, supporting the trades event. So they're going up to do 5 schools in 5 days where they talk to the kids about, you know, what's available.
In Timmins?
Across near Timmins. So Timmins is one of the places, but it's... I can't remember the other names of the other places. Liskard? I don't know.
New Liskard?
Maybe. Anyways, they're going to be up at 5 different schools in the area.
That's cool.
For 5 days. And to tell the kids, you know, what's available out there, you know, for trades. And because we have, like, welders and this, that.
That's the way to go anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way to go to anymore, is getting to a trade.
Yeah.
So many people coming out of universities and colleges without...
Highly educated fry guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. That's exactly what it becomes, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, so yes, we have snow.
Yes.
A little bit of snow here, just a teeny tiny bit, but
it's
a-coming.
Yeah, it's coming. And so,
have you put your snow tires on yet?
Yes, my snow tire's been on for 2 weeks now.
Really?
Something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Week and a half.
Look at you go, brown noser. Mm-hmm. What?
No, I had to do 3 sets. So it was my tires, my wife's tires, and my mother-in-law's tires.
And the tires on your motorcycle?
No, that's parked.
You don't get knobby tires for it? Spiky tires?
A buddy of mine did that. He got spiked knobby tires for his mountain bike so he could ride to and from work and do trails in the winter and stuff like that.
Yeah, we saw the fat bikes on the trails up in Algonquin.
Yeah, they're pretty. Yeah, I've never tried one. I've never ridden one, but I want to try one because, like, trail riding on sand, beaches, and whatever, apparently they're amazing.
Try before you buy.
Yes. You can rent them in Algonquin.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think they're. If we were doing a lot more bike riding.
Absolutely, yeah.
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 But I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I passed my bike off.
The only time we use it is when we go car camping. We bring the bike so that we can, like, at sandbanks, we can all ride bikes down to the beach and so on, right?
If you all had fat bikes, you could ride across the beach.
I know. Well, you know what? The beach at Sandbanks, there's near the water. It's hard packed like cement. So you can ride on it.
So it's easier to hit the beachgoers.
Yes, exactly. Run over the kids.
Excellent.
knocked out.
Oh, no, you don't have to run them over. They're already laying on the beach blanket.
There you go.
Okay. Just try it. That's where you practice your jumps.
Practice your bunny hops. Oops, that one wasn't good enough.
Check this out, Dad.
Left tread marks on that person.
Try it over the big guy. Get some height.
It's a jump.
So nothing else new?
Nothing is new. It's that time of year. There's not a lot going on. Finally getting most of my Christmas lights up and yard work, yards put to bed. And
oh, did you see our Christmas lights?
The neighbors? I stood. Hopefully they didn't notice me, but when I arrived tonight, I took a picture of your neighbor's yard.
They're probably saying, who's the weirdo that was taking a picture of our yard? But did you see our lights?
No, I didn't. You have lights?
Well, we have the one, like the front light, the porch light.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. I haven't done anything Christmas-wise.
Yeah.
At work, they're like, can you get all the Christmas decorations out for me? No.
No. Not interested.
I'm doing my part to not propagate the Christmas thing.
The kids aren't here anymore, so.
Right? No, but I am the post office.
Are you?
Everybody.
So their mail still comes in.
So, no. So everybody says, I want to get this for Ariana for Christmas. Oh. Can you order it from Amazon Japan and have it delivered and put a note saying, do not open till Christmas. Send me the money first.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, I order it. I send it. And then I said, it's going to cost you this much because apparently not everybody knows yen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I swear I'm going to start charging people a fee.
I know, right?
But she's getting a whole bunch of stuff from people. It makes things easier.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Other than that, yeah, I've just been working and working and working and then working. And
Me too.
Come home and go to work. That's it. That is it.
Yeah.
So doing a whole bunch of Googling this week. We've been talking a lot over the last year about Georgia.
Have we?
We have. And it's all about the no floating, no paddling, separating hunters and fishermen from the paddlers and recreational. Who can use what waterways? Who can't use what waterways?
There's a few states that are struggling with that.
Yeah. So this week, we're going to see the lighter side of Georgia where you can actually paddle.
Yes, the actual places you're allowed to go.
Mm-hmm. Imagine gliding through the pristine waterways surrounded by lush coastal landscapes, teeming wildlife. Georgia's sea islands harbor a network of secret kayak trails that beckon adventurers to explore their hidden wonders. From winding blackwater creeks to expansive salt marshes, these lesser-known paddling routes offer a glimpse into the untamed beauty of the Peach State's coast. I always forget it's called the Peach State.
How badly was Georgia hit by that recent storm?
Honestly, I gotta think they were hit. I don't know how bad, though.
Yeah, because it was the Carolinas that got the worst part of it.
Yeah. So there are Georgia's secret kayak trails where nature's splendor unfolds with each stroke of the paddle.
Why do they keep them secret?
I don't know. Maybe so people like you don't wander down there.
The little known trails.
Derek's coming to Georgia. Oh, who told him? Somebody let the secret out. The cat is out of the bag. So there's I've heard about these places before, but somebody's actually talked about them, these different water trails that they're not really secret, they're just not well known.
Yes, they're sort of that hidden stuff where, unless you're a local, you don't know about it. A lot of people outside don't know about it, but like a lot of these coastal states, they have some really amazing locations to paddle in, and people just don't really realize it, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a good time to highlight some of these locations because there's a lot of areas in the Carolinas and such that are suffering from recent storms. And so there's areas that aren't as damaged in Georgia that you can paddle into. It's shares a border with Florida, but so Jacksonville's right there across the border.
Mm-hmm. Talking about Virginia and North Carolina and the United Eastern United States and stuff like that, mm-hmm. when you're paddling.
Yeah.
Peter Frank.
Oh, yes. Great Loop. Where's he at right now?
He's down in the Great Dismal Swamp right now. He's just started that.
The Great Dismal Swamp.
It's southeastern Virginia and northeastern North Carolina. He's made quite the distance.
How do you spell dismal? M-A-L. There it is. Great Dismal Swamp.
You're going to start counting on your fingers soon, too, aren't you? 1, 2, 3, 4. Carry the 5.
It's a National Wildlife Reserve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chesapeake, Norfolk, Virginia.
So that's where he is now. Anyway, so talking about down that way. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different places they talk about. First one being the Altamaha River Bioreserve, nestled near St. Simons Island, just 45 minutes south of Savannah. That's one of the places people like to go, Savannah, Georgia.
Yeah, so a lot of these places are right there on the coastal area, like mm-hmm. near between Savannah, Brunswick, and Jacksonville, Florida. It's right along the coastline. Most of these items are right in or near Savannah, Georgia.
Mm-hmm. So if you're going down there for a holiday,
mm-hmm.
take your kayak with you.
Yeah, Savannah, Georgia is a nice place to go.
Mm-hmm. The Altamaha River Bioreserve, a kayaker's dream come true. Vast ecological treasure trove spans over 137,000 acres of diverse habitats, including blackwater swamps and ancient forests. As you navigate its waterways, you'll encounter an astounding array of wildlife, from playful dolphins to majestic eagles soaring overhead.
That's amazing.
Would you rather paddle with dolphins or whales?
I would like to do both.
No, you only get to choose one. Well, both was not an option. Are you even... is this thing on?
Dolphins seem less dangerous. I don't want to be eaten by an orca. Wait,
have you never seen the guy paddling? Or no, surfing? The big wave, and there's dolphins surfing with them?
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
And the one jumps out and just body checks him off the board?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, dude knew what he was doing on purpose. So, yeah, I wouldn't say they're friendlier. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he didn't do it on purpose.
Yeah. I didn't like the look of him. I'm taking him out. yeah, I think
my wave.
I think I'd go with you with the dolphins.
Yeah.
Now, when you get the big whales, I think when you're thinking, do I really want to be paddling with whales? You're thinking killer whales.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the sheer size of, like, the humpbacks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to notice you there. Or if they do, they're going to forget how big they are.
I've seen a few videos where breaching whales have landed on sailboats or landed on kayakers. Yeah. Or
well, that guy got eaten.
Well, they didn't get eaten. They came up getting fish, and suddenly there's a kayaker in the whale's mouth. It's like, oops. Hear about the orcas out west? So they've seen it before, back in, I think, 97 or 87, and then they saw it again now. And they say it's just a playful way that orcas and killer whales do things. But they're carrying dead salmon on their heads as they swim around, and they're playing with a dead salmon on their heads.
Really?
And they say it's just a manner of play for orcas. They come up under the salmon and balance it on their head and swim and try not to lose the salmon. You know how people like put plates or stuff on their head and walk
hang
around.
A spoon off your nose?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so orcas are swimming around with dead salmon on their heads. They said they've seen it before. It's been a while, but they say it's a fun, playful
back
trait.
In fashion.
Yeah, it's back in fashion.
Yeah.
See my hat? You like my hat?
You like my hat.
I like the smell of dead salmon.
You. we've been having the salmon run here. It's over, so there's a lot of dead salmon.
Oh, but the dead salmon
people
there. Oh, stinks
are
so bad.
Like so mad at their dogs.
Oh, yes.
Because the dogs just go down to the river
yes.
and start rolling in the dead salmon. Everybody's dog but mine.
Excellent. Right
she
on.
Does not, she wants nothing to do with dead salmon. Hot diggity. So I'm watching all these people come by with these disgustingly stinky dogs.
Yeah.
And there's my dog. Doo, 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 doo. My dog's a sis. Anyway, back to Georgia. Local guy Tom Johnson says the Altamaha is like a living museum of coastal Georgia's natural history. Every bend in the river reveals something new and exciting, with trips ranging from half-day excursions to multi-day adventures. The bioreserve caters to paddlers of all levels, offering a chance to immerse yourself in the heart of Georgia's wild coast.
Nice.
That's never something I've never really had the opportunity to do, is like just paddle the coast. Like either of Canada's coasts.
Yeah.
Like I don't count like Superior and
Erie and Lake
Ontario as coasts, even though they're big.
I've paddled in the inland waterways off Vancouver Island and Victoria Harbor, Esquimalt Harbor, but I've never been out open ocean paddling.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a little too nervous for it.
Yeah, you got to know the tides and stuff.
You got to know the tides. You need the experience. You know, swells can come in that can be challenging. I never did get up enough experience on a sea kayak to be confident enough to be out in open water. So,
see, I'm going to be the guy that rides the tide out, and then I'm going to turn around and go, "Ah, crap!" And I'll be dragging that kayak 2 miles back to shore. That's me. Yeah. Or I'll just sit in my kayak till the tide comes in. Forgetting, I'm not walking.
Find a rock out there, a bird rock out there, to tie up to, wait for the tide to come back.
Right? In. Yeah, that's going to be me, buddy. Second one is the Little Tybee Island. Just out of the Tybee Island lies a hidden gem that's accessible only by boat, Little Tybee Island. This uninhabited nature preserve spans 6,780 acres of pristine beaches, salt marshes, and maritime forests. Kayaking to Little Tybee is not for the faint of heart, as treacherous currents demand respect and careful planning. However, those who make the journey are rewarded with unparalleled solitude and natural beauty.
There you go.
Again, I would ride the tides out. Walk back. Marine biologist Dr. Sarah Waters explains that the Little Tybee is a living laboratory of coastal ecosystems, one of the few places where you can truly disconnect from the modern world and connect with nature in its purest form. Keep your eyes peeled for dolphins, sea turtles, and an impressive variety of shorebirds as you paddle along the island's untouched shoreline. The turtles will be cool. We saw him with the big sea turtles when we were in Mexico.
Be amazing,
years
right?
ago, but dolphins and sea turtles.
Mm-hmm. And it'd be so unique. It'd be so different from what we were used to here in Ontario, right? So it'd be a very unique experience.
Yeah, the turtles are bigger down there.
Much bigger.
Much bigger. Hate to see the frogs. Wausau Island National Wildlife Refuge. For those seeking a truly off-the-beaten-path experience, Wausau Island National Wildlife Refuge offers an unparalleled kayaking adventure. This barrier island, located just south of Little Tybee, has remained virtually untouched by human development. As you paddle around its shores, you'll feel as if you've traveled back in time to a pristine coastal wilderness. Island's 10,053 acres are home to diverse ecosystems, including maritime forests, salt marshes, sandy beaches. Kayakers can explore the intricate network of tidal creeks that weave through the marshes, offering glimpses of wildlife and breathtaking vistas. While access to the island itself is limited, the surrounding waters provide ample opportunities for exploration and discovery.
Ooh.
This may sound like a stupid question.
Oh, probably will be.
Are there sea otters on the Atlantic coast?
Gotta be.
Every time I see sea otters...
There's the giant sea otters.
They're always east, giant sea otters. West.
Yeah, there's giant sea otters off California. Those ones are big, apparently. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some on the East Coast. I don't know.
There's still big ones on the... Yeah, because you're thinking of all these...
Yeah.
This sounds like great habitat for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've ever seen any shows or documentation. Google that.
I've got to do that right now.
Now he's got to Google it, because sometimes we're just dumb about these things. You know, it sounds like common sense that they would be there. But then you're going to say, otters appear everywhere in the world except on the east coast of North America. I'll laugh if it says that.
It says British Columbia. There are no sea otters on the east coast of Canada. Sea otters are natural Pacific Ocean's northeast seaboards, so they are not found in the east coast or the Gulf of Mexico. Instead, the east coast of Canada has river otters, which also use the sea. Huh. They were once found in coastal areas from northern Japan to central Baja California, Mexico. However, the maritime fur trade from the late 1700s to 1911 drove them to the brink of extinction. Surprise, surprise. The last known sea otters in British Columbia waters were shot in 1929.
Wow.
Hmm. They were in the 60s and 70s that sea otters were reintroduced to parts of their former range, including British Columbia. Sea otters in British Columbia can be found along much of the west coast of Vancouver Island, parts of central mainland coast. Huh. Fisheries and Oceans Canada monitors sea otter population and conducts research. There you go.
So when I win the millions, I'm starting a breeding program for the east coast sea otter. That's my plan.
Sounds like an amazing plan.
That's not sound like something that should be like, of course they've got to be there.
Yeah.
But apparently they're not. Mm-hmm. How weird.
Yeah, see, it says all up and down the east coast, USA, Canada, there's no sea otters. They're native to the Pacific Ocean.
Huh.
That's like penguins. Penguins are in Antarctica, but not up north.
Up in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably because they keep heading south and hit land. Figuring they go around the long way.
Yeah. Well, there's no polar bears in Antarctica.
See? It's a trade-off. Never the two shall meet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so yeah, this sounds like a place that there'd be otters, but apparently, yeah, there won't be.
Yeah, no otters.
If you're looking for a fun time and you want to keep the kids occupied, tell them, hey, first one to find an otter gets $10.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They'll be keeping busy looking. And oh, it'll be a nice, peaceful trip.
Free trip to Europe for the first otter.
Next area is the Buffalo Swamp. Deep within the Altamaha River Bioreserve lies Buffalo Swamp, a mesmerizing freshwater tidal swamp. See, freshwater and swamp just don't seem to go together.
I know.
A tidal swamp that feels like stepping into another world. Towering cypress trees draped in Spanish moss create a natural cathedral, their knobby knees protruding from the dark waters. Paddling through this enchanted landscape is a surreal experience that connects you to the ancient rhythms of the coastal ecosystem. Local naturalist Emily Carter remarks, Buffalo Swamp is like nature's time capsule. Some of these cypress trees are over 1,000 years old, silently witnessing the ebb and flow of life in the swamp. Oh, if those trees could talk. Half-day trips allow you to explore this unique environment, while overnight camping trips offer a chance to fully immerse yourself in the swamp's nocturnal symphony.
Hmm. What kind of snakes they got in Georgia?
Snakes and gators. Piranhas, hippopotamus.
Yeah,
that'd be kind of cool to do that.
It would be.
I mean, things like that, I mean, as weird as it sounds, you need to take somebody you know down there to take you out camping just so you don't.
Exactly. Hey, show me where to go, what to watch out for.
Because, I mean, up here, watch out for the bear.
Yeah.
Down there. Yeah, the snakes, you're not really going to see the snakes, but you don't want to step there.
Yeah.
That's where the snakes hang out.
You need a local to know, hey, this is where the snakes tend to sleep.
Right? And when you're walking, look up.
Yeah.
Because the snakes hang in the trees.
Hanging from the trees.
Oh, yeah. Pinckney Island National Wildlife Refuge. While not technically part of Georgia's Sea Islands, Pinckney Island National Wildlife Refuge, just across the border in South Carolina, it wants to be part of Georgia, is a must-visit destination for kayakers exploring the region. The 4,053-acre refuge offers a network of pristine waterways that wind through diverse habitats, including salt marshes, tidal creeks, and maritime forests. One of the highlights of paddling around Pinckney Island is White Point, a secluded spot that juts into Port Royal Sound. Here you can beach your kayak on a wild bleached shell reef and explore the island's interior trails on foot. Keep an eye out for the refuge's abundant wildlife, including fiddler crabs scuttling along the shore and colorful butterflies flitting through the air.
Hmm.
Fiddler crabs, yeah. Wear shoes.
Yes, yeah.
The last one is McQueen's Island Trail. For a unique blend of history and nature, kayak along the Savannah River parallel to McQueen's Island Trail. 6-mile trail follows the old rail bed of a train that once connected Savannah to Tybee Island. While the trail itself is popular for walking and biking, paddling alongside it offers a different perspective on this historic route. As you glide through the water, you'll be treated to panoramic views of coastal marshlands and the distant skyline of Savannah. The area is rich in wildlife with opportunities to spot dolphins, turtles, and a variety of shorebirds. Paddle trip is perfect for those looking to combine a bit of exercise, don't use that word, with a journey through Georgia's coastal history. So, dolphins and sea turtles and shorebirds tend to be the thing down there.
Yes. Well, yeah, it is. Well, coastal, seawater, mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada.
And then you go to Florida and you get manatees everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But these aren't talking about all the animals that are going to try to kill you when you're down there, too. Which you got to watch out for. So those are a few of the spots if you want to head to Georgia. Now, there's some other little notes they put here, like navigating the tides, which we don't worry about. But kayaking in Georgia's sea islands requires careful planning and respect for the natural forces at play. Tidal changes can dramatically alter water levels and currents, turning a leisurely paddle into a challenging endeavor. Always check tide charts before setting out and plan your trip to coincide with favorable tidal conditions. Weather conditions can change rapidly in coastal areas, so it's crucial to stay informed about forecasts and be prepared for sudden shifts in wind or rain. Pack appropriate gear, including sun protection, plenty of water, and emergency supplies. For those new to coastal kayaking, guided tours are an excellent way to explore these waterways safely while learning about the unique ecosystems you're paddling through. I think if I was heading out on a big trip on the coast for the first time,
mm-hmm.
I would definitely take somebody that knows the area, especially when it comes to tides.
Yeah,
somebody's
familiar. Sort of thing. Yeah, because there's areas that you get in trouble with. There could be rip tides. There could be, you know, if there's mm-hmm. a small channel of islands, then the high water flow as the tides change between the islands. You'd need a local who could kind of give you some pointers or come with you and be a guide and stuff like that, because stuff like that is not something you play with.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as you explore the secret kayak trails of Georgia's sea islands, it's essential to practice responsible tourism. It's a big thing. Responsible tourism. I do mm-hmm. like that term. And minimize your impact on these fragile ecosystems. Adhere to the leave no trace principle by packing out all trash and avoid disturbing wildlife or vegetation. Respect nesting areas and maintain a safe distance from all animals, including the charismatic dolphins and manatees you might encounter.
Hmm.
Supporting local operators like Atamaha Coastal Tours or Sea Kayak Georgia not only ensures a safe and informative experience, but also contributes to local economy and conservation efforts. These guys are often passionate stewards of the environment, sharing valuable insights about the ecology and history of the region. And that's the other thing. If you're on a tour, you know, I mean, it goes with any kind of like bus yep. tour yep. or anything. The guide that's on leading is going to tell you all about this.
Yeah,
this
unique. This. Exactly.
Because how many times you've been paddling out there going, hey, what's? I wonder what that is.
Yeah.
We got to take a picture yeah. of it. I'll see if I can find this when I get home.
Exactly. And then you find out later it was like a unique whaling station from the 1800s. And it's something you could have stopped and looked at, but you mm-hmm. didn't know about it.
Yeah. Who knows, so these right? people will know that sort of thing. So if you're looking to go down to Georgia, check out the Sea Islands. The secret kayak trails
mm-hmm.
that no one tells Derek about because so they're afraid he'll go.
Where was the fiddle off there in Georgia? You know, when the devil went down to Georgia and...
Oh, I think that was the other side.
Yeah.
You mean when he was looking for a soul to steal?
Yes, yes.
And he bet his fiddle of gold against Johnny's soul?
Exactly. Was that near...
Think he was better than him?
Was that near Atlanta?
No, I think that was on the... that would have been the west side of Georgia, I think.
Columbus?
Maybe. Like, I know Georgia, buddy.
I don't know. Yeah. Aren't you musically inclined, or?
Not with that music. Nope.
Well, where's that four-way, the four corners of the, there's it's of music history?
That's in Mississippi.
Yes, what was
Clarksdale,
that?
Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Clarksdale, Mississippi. That was, yeah, what?
The crossroads. The devil.
No, he didn't go there.
Mr. Johnson.
Is that what that one is?
Yeah. Sold a soul to the devil at the crossroads.
Hmm.
Became the world's best blues guitarist.
Yeah.
Down at the crossroads, baby.
Yeah.
Been there on a Friday the 13th.
Oh, were you?
On a full moon. Yep. Nothing happened. Went to a local barbecue place, ate way too much barbecue, and woke up later with the meat sweats.
Oh, perfect.
That therein was the devil. Hey, you want to go for a free kayak trip?
I do.
As long as you pick up some trash as you go, you can glide along rivers and canals in Denmark, Norway, Finland, Sweden, Japan, and Japan. Ooh, hello.
There you go.
And Germany, thanks to an idea born in Copenhagen. Called Green Kayak, people are kitted out with green boats and equipped with a large bucket and two litter pickers.
Hmm.
They're also handed maps of the waterways showing where protected birds or plants should be avoided. After each tour, their litter pickings are weighed and recorded. Germany is currently expanding the project, which is established in Berlin, Hamburg, and Leipzig, and is set to grow into Saxony-Anhalt, and Thuringia?
I don't mean.
Thuringia. Yeah. It is working. A stroll along Leipzig's waterways reveals remarkable clean waters, thanks to Green Kayak volunteers who have been paddling through the city's rivers and canals for some time now. Birgit Paul from the Association for the Economy for the Common Good Central Germany started the project in Leipzig in May and is delighted with the process so far. The first 2 months, 116 paddlers collect 206 kilograms or 454 pounds of litter.
Well, that's a lot of litter.
In just a couple of months. There were particularly rich pickings while Germany was hosting the European football tournament. Leipzig was one of the 10 host cities with fans visiting from around the world.
A lot of extra garbage. Volunteers
mainly collected beer bottles, cans, plastic packaging from water. There was really a lot to do, says Paul. Leipzig city officials reckon 20 to 25 tons of litter accumulate and need to be disposed of in the area's medium-sized bodies of water every year. 20 to 25 tons every year.
That's too much.
That's way too much. That quantity could rise as city administrators say littering has increased in recent years.
Hmm.
I wonder why.
Like,
you figure, like, people know, and there's more. I mean, I know for our area, you're seeing more garbage cans and stuff, but
I think in the 80s and 90s, people were more aware, you know, created Earth Day and stuff like that. But I think post-COVID, in the last few years post-COVID, there's a lot more people out and about doing stuff outdoors, and I think that might maybe contributed to it.
Yeah.
But also, I think we're kind of regressing when it comes to awareness of the environment and what we're doing to the planet.
And more people, like you say, out there.
Yeah, a lot
more
people out
COVID,
there.
Especially since COVID, more people out there, and they just don't grasp the concept.
Yeah, and that's just not a local phenomenon. That's
everywhere.
Worldwide. Everybody's getting out more because of following COVID.
Association for the Economy for the Common Good of Central Germany plans to offer more boats in Dresden and Halle next year and in Jena the following year, with all three cities looking forward to supporting the project. But money is needed first. The association needs sponsors before it can put the boats in. It says we want to have two boat stations in Halle and in Dresden, preferably two to four, Paul says. Oak Carstensen, 33, co-founder of the Danish NGO Green Kayak, who started the project in 2017 with a friend after completing his master's degree in Copenhagen, is pleased about Leipzig's progress. Not bad at all for a completely new city. The high demand really pleasantly surprised us, he says. Getting started in Oslo was much harder. In the first few years, we didn't have as many people on the water there. Overall, most locations see some 20 tons
That's
of litter
crazy.
Collected annually. in Berlin about 1,900 kilograms or 4,200 pounds of litter were collected from the water in 2023. Most of the trash is consumer products such as plastic packaging and cigarette butts. You know how many cigarette butts you'd need to collect?
To make a ton?
We have also already pulled bicycles, e-scooters, even jewelry out of the water, he says. Clothing items are not so uncommon. The project aims to bring people together from different social backgrounds to use the kayaks for free. It is important to us that the offer is and remains free so that anyone who wants to commit to the environment can actively participate. After all, litter is caused by people, and the environment does not distinguish between rich and poor.
There you go.
Youngsters can get involved too, Paul says. The Economy for the Common Good of Central Germany is working with schools and a children's restaurant in eastern Leipzig to introduce children to the topic of environmental protection in a simple way.
Hmm. I like that. That's and it's well, this Green Canoe program is
anything all, you can give somebody for free.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So here's your incentive. Go pick garbage and you get to borrow these kayaks for free. Yeah. You just got to come back with a bucket full of garbage.
Throw some garbage in. Do a little bit of picking. Do a little bit of paddling. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your day. And you come back with a couple of buckets of some trash and help out the environment. Good day to do
That's impressive.
Yeah.
It's the first I heard of it.
I've heard of other
similar programs. Yes.
But yeah, this one's apparently, like I say, hitting all these different cities. And when you can hit this many cities from this many different countries, it just grows from there.
Yes.
Right.
And it's amazing that you can collect that much garbage just by going out on a kayak and, you know, coastal lake waterways, rivers and stuff like that and find that much trash. Just shows you how irresponsible we are.
Well, when we go cruising down Duffins.
Yeah.
I mean, we're finding golf balls. We're finding fishing hooks.
Well, the golf balls aren't people dumping garbage. It's just
bad golf players. Yeah, but they should go get them anyway. They get them anyway. fire extinguishers.
Yeah.
Tons of plastic pop bottles.
It always amazes me when you go along remote waterways. Like there's a couple creeks in Bowmanville and so on that it's like, how did they get a shopping cart this far down the creek?
Right.
It had to be in the wintertime when the water's frozen or something,
and they were on the river, walking the ice.
It's just like, there's a shopping cart. What? I don't understand.
And then they saw a big open spot.
Yeah.
And they just did the old curling maneuver.
And usually you're in a, like I've seen a couple in areas where I could only get to by canoe, right? Or walking the creek bed. But it's like somebody's not going to push a shopping cart there. It had to get there in the winter.
Well, I won't do that a fourth time.
Just amazes me where shopping carts show up.
Yeah, everywhere. That and one sock on portages.
Yeah.
Just the mystery. The mystery.
One sock.
For every sock that goes missing from your dryer, there is a sock on a portage somewhere in this planet.
Park. Somewhere's in a park.
I'm going to go get a PhD, and that's going to be my final theory. My PhD theory that I have to defend is the connection between the lost sock from the dryer and the ones found at the end of portages.
My dissertation.
Yeah, my dissertation.
For a master's degree. Yeah. Where do the missing socks go?
I mean, they can't prove me wrong.
It's peer-reviewed.
Right?
Peer-review this one, sucka.
Yeah. Prove me wrong, people. I wonder if I can get some funding for that study.
I know, right?
Oh, just pictures of socks found on portages and pictures of socks from dryers from around the world and see if we can match them up.
Well, you know, it's funny. Sometimes you hear of a study that is like, what? A government body paid for that study?
You got $5 million for that?
And so, you know what? It's not unreasonable that they're going to study the missing sock phenomena.
See?
Phenomena.
I'm going to be famous. Dun, 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 dun. Phenomena. Dun, 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 dun.
The missing sock phenomena. Dissertation by Sean Raleigh.
There you go. If you'd like to help fund this project. Oh, and you know there's people. I got $10. Yeah, because maybe this project could get off the ground, unlike our let's buy that used battleship and make it a coffee stand. I only got about $100 worth of offers on that one. Bunch of cheap people. There was another thing in the news happening.
Yes.
Now, it's not so much the story that bothered us.
Mm-hmm. It's that everybody got certain details wrong.
All the places that talk about this.
If they're a news site.
Call him a kayaker.
Yes, if it was a news site, they got called it a kayak.
But then when you're actually in the articles, yep, they talk about him rafting.
Yes. So I think it's just...
And then when you look at the boats they were using...
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell they were.
Yes. Me and Sean tried to research, and I even
way
did...
Way too much time spent on this.
I did Google image, reverse image search and stuff like that, trying to figure out what kind of rafts these were. Still couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. Anyway. So a 65-year-old Lithuanian tourist was rafting / kayaking / we don't know Tasmania's Franklin River with a group of 10 other people, slipped while scouting an area, became trapped and partially submerged between some boulders. His leg became trapped in a rock crevice while his friends watched helplessly from the shore. An hour later, authorities were alerted to his situation. So apparently they couldn't get him out, so yeah, it was time for the authorities. Specialist rescue units from across Tasmania responded, but the location's inaccessibility and the river's conditions complicated the effort. Franklin River runs through 130 kilometers of mountainous terrain in the central highlands of Tasmania. Named after John Franklin, a governor of Tasmania, best known for his disastrous 1845 Arctic expedition. But that's another story.
He was a governor of Tasmania?
Yep. Hello, governor. Tasmania. Huh. Yep. Though the area was not easily accessible, emergency workers succeeded in reaching the scene, a joint operation between Ambulance Tasmania, Tasmania Police, Surf Life Saving Tasmania, the State Emergency Service, and the Tasmania Fire Service. So, like, everybody in Tasmania.
Yeah. Everybody's out there trying to help.
Attempted to free the man. Despite multiple attempts to free him throughout the evening and night, initial efforts were unsuccessful as his leg was too tightly wedged.
And he's up to his waist in water.
And he's just wearing his wetsuit. And mm-hmm. they say it went down to like 13 degrees Celsius at night. As the hours wore on, they tried to make the man who spoke little English as comfortable as possible by giving him food and water. A Lithuanian doctor who had also been part of the group served as translator. Medical team stayed with him through the night. In the morning, they made another unsuccessful attempt to free him. Man's condition was deteriorating, and the rescuers had to take drastic measures. Both the victim and his rescuers agreed they should remove his trapped leg in the hope of saving his life. Not as in remove it
from the rocks,
remove it from the rest of his body.
Yes.
They sedated the man, amputated his leg above the knee with the aid of specialist equipment. And the pictures they show these jaws of life, which look like a giant pair of scissors, which leads us to think, is that what they used? Because they don't actually get into what the specialized equipment is.
Yeah. So these are like the curvy scissor things that you cut off an A pillar or a B pillar in a motor vehicle rescue, so it chops the metal. So these hydraulic scissor clamps.
And they're not fast.
No, they're not fast. So it's like, oh, did they use that? But no, I don't think so. They do say that they practice amputations, these rescue teams, but they've never practiced in a river before.
Well, now they're going to be practicing. They've just added something.
Yeah, they did an underwater amputation.
Yeah, so they sedated him, amputated his knee. The man, freed but in critical condition, was airlifted to the Royal Hobart Hospital. This rescue was extremely challenging and technical operation and an incredible effort over many hours to save the man's life, said Acting Assistant Commissioner Doug Oosterloo. Acting Assistant Commissioner. I hope this doesn't affect his becoming the full-time Assistant Commissioner.
Yeah.
You know, we gave you the job as the acting.
I've only been here for 2 months.
This is what happens. This rescue was the worst-case scenario of worst-case scenarios, the rescue team admitted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is some... I mean, who practices this?
Yeah. I know, right? So they did have all the equipment. And, you know, I imagine when... You know, what is it? The movie 72 Hours, you know, the guy who...
Oh, got his arm caught under the...
Caught by rock. Falling rock in Grand Canyon. So I imagine incidents like that, they think to themselves, okay, well, that's an incident we have to prepare for. So a trapped appendage in a rock fall. Somebody gets trapped partially by a rock avalanche. We have to know how to rescue. If somebody gets stuck in an overturned boat on a river, we need to be able to cut them free. And plus there's rescued, like normal rescues. They'd be pulling people from cars and cutting car tops off and stuff like that, right? So, but this is something that he was partially submerged with heavy water flow pinning him to the rock, and some of these hydraulic units for lifting.
Well,
they
had these big airbags and
hydraulics
that were good for up to 50 tons,
and they could not separate these rocks.
Anything.
They could not move the rocks. That's incredible.
And it's not like they can get one of those big jackhammer.
Yeah, you're not gonna. Yeah. Exactly.
Machines in there.
Bring the backhoe.
Yeah.
Bring a high angle crane.
Yeah.
So it's they did what they could, but in the end, to save his life, they had to remove most of his leg.
Definitely, I'm sure the last thing he thought would happen on this trip. So what's the worst could get at? Well, now you know.
Yep. Yep.
I hope that he's got a good sense of humor about it at the end of the day.
Oh, I know.
I mean, not right, definitely not right now. He's not going to have.
No, but I imagine he will eventually.
Years down the road when him and these 10 other people get together
and have
a little joke session.
Yeah, they're going to be.
Yeah. I'd be the first on him cracking jokes. I would be on him cracking jokes left, right, and center.
Exactly.
But now, hopefully, it sounds like he's pulling through, because this happened a couple weeks back. So
November 22nd.
Yeah, so they're, man, could you imagine, though? And if you Google it, you'll see the pictures of how he's stuck, and you're thinking, like,
that
doesn't look like that'd be a place you'd get that stuck, but
I know, right?
It's what's underwater you don't see.
Exactly. And it would be too dangerous for somebody to go underwater to see what they could do. So everything was done from the surface.
Yeah.
And it was like he was between.
Well, he did say his leg was broke, too.
Did he say that?
Yeah, because his little English.
Or did he say thought it was broke?
He said they were trying to pull him out, and he says, my leg is broke.
Hmm. Hmm.
That's how we knew he only had a little bit of English.
So, yeah, that's very unfortunate.
Well, it's a lot more broke now.
Yeah.
But, it's, eesh. How do you consciously make that decision?
I know. It's like, how do you, fortunately, one of the people there had the ability to translate English into their native language, and it's like, here's the decision.
And he was a doctor as well.
So you've been trapped here for 20 hours now. If we can't get you out, you're like, he was already starting to suffer hypothermia. Mm-hmm. So he was on the verge of hypothermia. So it's like, dude, if we don't take drastic measures, you're going to die.
I want to know how they did it, but I don't want to know how.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's like watching a car accident. You want to see the car accident, but you don't want to see the car accident.
Well, the guy in Grand Canyon, he used a pocket knife.
Right?
Yeah. It's like, wow. Like, he's cutting and slashing and pulling and tearing and all by his one free hand. And, oof. Yeah, wow. That's a big decision. But you know what? When it comes to, like, it depends on how strong your will to live is. It's like, you know what? You kind of got to do stuff.
Comes a time, you either got
to... Extreme measures to your will to live overcomes.
Scary.
Yep.
Scary. You know, and that's what they say. That's why you never go alone, because no one would know he was out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But I, like I say, we got all through that and everything. Our discussions were that. And then we saw the pictures of the boats from up in the air. And you could tell somebody's taking it from a helicopter because you can see the ski.
There was some pictures taken from a cliff face and some pictures from, you could see the skid of the helicopter.
Yeah. So they're looking down at these three. They look like three kayaks.
Pontoon rafts. Yeah,
and there's bars. When you zoom in, you can see sticks or bars, poles between them.
Yeah. So
there's three sets, six total. So there's three sets of these things.
So 11 guys on three
catamaran
type pontoon.
But we can't figure out, like I say, they're saying he's a kayaker, they're rafting. They're,
yeah.
They got these weird things. We don't know what was going on. So if anybody sees the picture and knows the kind of boats they were using.
Yeah, I'm curious.
We're curious. We want to know what they are. Let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been to Bali?
No.
Why not?
I'm not
talking Bali Fitness.
I've barely left Canada.
Are you talking about? You were on a Navy ship for crying out loud.
Yeah, I was at sea. Ever been to sea, Billy? But no, not Bali. Bali is a vacation location.
Ooh, vacation location?
Yeah.
You're a poet. You don't know it. Your feet are big because you're Longfellow.
After it came out, it's like, wait, did I just say?
See, that's how good you've gotten. You don't even have to try anymore, Derek.
Exactly. Anyways, tell me about Bali.
There are many ways to arrive at a hotel. Taxi, bus, or limousine. Now you can add a river raft thanks to Four Seasons Resort Bali at Sayin. Hotel already noted for its dramatic treetop arrival via a suspension bridge.
Yes, I've seen that.
Now offers guests a 180-degree change of perspective with Bali's first hotel arrival by river raft.
Yeah, you're not bringing evening wear on that trip.
Four Seasons Resort Bali has launched a rafting check-in as an option for guests transferring from a sister resort, the beachfront Four Seasons Jimbaran Bay. So if you're spending some time at this one, and then you're going to go over to their other resort and spend a few days at this one.
Raft into it.
Instead of the usual 90-minute road transfer, travelers combining a stay at both resorts can instead be taken by private car, 60-minute drive, to the departure point for a two-hour rafting adventure down Bali's longest river, the Ayung. Rafters land directly at the resort's riverside restaurant, where staff are waiting to ensure a seamless check-in.
Very cool.
Does not feel like a check-in experience, but rather a transition to another world welcomed by the friendliest people on earth, says resort manager Gianni Costa.
Gianni.
For guests who book the Bali Twice the Magic combined stay package at Four Seasons Resorts, a private rafting transfer is available at $245 US for two people.
Anybody who into adventure tourism, that's a good option.
Right? A good two-hour
rafting. A little bit of high class, and it's five-star resort, so a little bit of high class.
And I got to think they just continue on with all your luggage and everything in the car.
They'll probably bring the luggage back.
Because if you tip and there's all your luggage and souvenirs gone from the first half of your trip.
My tuxedo was in that bag.
So if you're going to Bali, that's an option.
That's cool.
Right?
That's a neat option.
This treetop arrival by suspension bridge.
I've seen that. So I've seen some of those, like Bali, Costa Rica. It's pretty cool where you do either a suspension bridge or you do a zip line up to, and then there's like a pulley system to hoist all your bags up into your treehouse. And it's pretty cool. I've never done it.
You want to stay at our other restaurant or other resort? Come over here. We'll shoot you out of this cannon.
We'll reverse bungee into the treehouse.
This is awesome. 9 out of 10 people make it. If you miss, your stay is free.
Yes.
Hotel bills are not.
You get to stay in the ocean because you're going to land beyond land.
Oh, jeez. Those participating in water sports and other activities out at sea have been urged to remain vigilant during the current northeast monsoon season, which continues in March in Singapore.
Yes.
So if you're in Singapore or heading there, planning to do some water sports,
monsoon season, which I'm sure if you're planning a trip like that to that area of the world, then you'll be more than aware of monsoon season and the risks involved.
Maritime Port Authority of Singapore says in an advisory on December 2nd that the monsoon season may bring stronger winds, choppy seas, conditions, moderate to heavy rain, and an increased risk of lightning. Sounds like an adventure to me. Doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Yeah. Members of the public are encouraged to take appropriate measures for their safety while at sea, including wearing life jackets for those taking part in water activities such as canoeing and kayaking. Participants should also check weather forecasts and tidal conditions, conduct pre-activity checks, observe relevant safety guidelines, and note emergency protocols. Additionally, they should be equipped with the correct safety equipment and act responsibly for their own safety and that of those under their care.
Huh.
And we'll get new kids later if we lose them.
Make more.
Operators, meanwhile, must ensure that their equipment and craft are in good condition and that the customers have their life jackets on before commencing activities. The MPA says the inspectors will conduct additional checks on ferries, harbor craft, and pleasure craft during the monsoon season. This includes assessing the general condition of the vessels, the embarking and disembarking process, the readiness of firefighting and life-saving equipment on board, so that would be the bigger boats, and the operator's familiarity. I think there was a couple extra A's and I's in that one. Familiarity with emergency procedures. National Maritime Safety at Sea Council Chairman Ishak Ismail said safety at sea is a shared responsibility that requires partnership between government, industry, and community to foster a culture of vigilance and preparedness. He noted that it is about personal safety as well. I encourage those engaging in recreational activities at sea to stay informed, prepare for emergencies, and understand their limits when engaging in these activities. So if you're going to Singapore... They're not telling you don't go paddling.
Anywhere in the region, if you're there.
They're just telling you be prepared.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who's actually going to go to Singapore during that time of year just to do this stuff?
You never know.
I guess if you're on business or something, right?
So, with tourism nowadays, as a lot of people recommend, it's like, so if you want to go and see the historical centers and see the interesting things without the crowds, because during peak high tourism season, the locals are not so happy to have that many tourists there. So you come across grumpy locals and big crowds, and you know, there's just hard to get into restaurants and so on. If you go in monsoon season, people are more than happy to see it because you're bringing off-season tourist dollars. You may get a bit of rain, and you may have to kind of
lightning and
duck a few things flying through the air, but you're going to be welcomed, and you're going to be able to see a lot of the touristy stuff and historical stuff without all the hustle bustle of high-season tourism.
Well, on that same sort of thought train...
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the Toronto Zoo when it's raining in the summer, after it's like hot, and then it's pouring rain,
all the animals
less
are going to
crowds,
and
all the animals are out enjoying the cool rain.
Exactly.
And you see animals you never get to see because they're always way back in a paddock somewhere or
hiding from the heat and finding a shady tree to sleep under.
Yeah. Hmm. Except the hyenas. I love the hyenas.
Yeah.
They're always hiding somewhere. I rarely get to
waiting for some errant human to walk into their paddock.
Yeah. Look at that, man. That's how you should get to see them. I'll just climb that fence and get on over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or pay somebody to do that.
I want to pet a hyena.
Right? You see pictures of them, like these guys in Africa, they got hyenas on these big chains.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't agree with that, but if he said I could pet him, I would be petting him.
Scary creatures.
Yeah. They are, but there's just something about them that I like. Last thing I got here, do you got anything else?
I don't.
Oh, slacker. Last thing, a did you know?
Yep.
President Marcos has declared the fourth week of October of every year as Moving Forward Paddling Week Philippines.
Yes, so
part of the effort to promote the Philippines as a top paddling destination and encourage it as a sport or leisure activity.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
He's trying to drum up tourism dollars. He's trying to get people into the Philippines to visit.
Right. Signed October 2nd, Proclamation number 699 tasked the Philippine Sports Commission to lead, coordinate, and supervise the observance of the Moving Forward Paddling Week Philippines. Celebration of the Moving Forward Paddling Week Philippines aims to promote the Philippines as a premier paddling destination, encourage all communities to adopt paddling as a sport and a leisure activity. In water sports, paddling is the act of propelling a watercraft using a handheld paddle with single or dual blades that is not attached to the boat. Kayaking, canoeing, rafting, dragon boat racing, and stand-up paddle boarding are some of the common paddle sports. A whole week dedicated to it.
That's amazing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fourth week of October every year.
Proclamation 699.
He was one away from being 700.
Well, you got to wonder, they're probably going, we want this proclamation to be 700, so better squeeze this one in now.
Get this one in, yeah.
The important one's going to be 700.
Anyone got any filler proclamations?
Exactly. We need a filler proclamation. Hey, there's a canoe thing.
So if you're going from Singapore, the monsoon season,
yeah.
And then you're heading later in the year, say the fourth week of October, towards the Philippines.
Hmm. Well, you're in town.
So you can go to Georgia and do all these hidden coastal trails. Yep. You can go to the Philippines in October. You can go to Singapore area during the monsoon season.
Yep.
You can go to Germany or Denmark, Norway, Finland, Sweden, Japan any time of year and go paddling.
Some of the northern countries are going to be a bit more cold and snowy.
You can go to Bali and do a rafting trip for 2 hours to get to your hotel.
Mm-hmm.
All around the world today, let me tell you.
Yes.
In Tasmania. I'm kind of leery on Tasmania right now, but hey, the rest of them are awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So
trips there cost you an arm and a leg.
No, not the arm. Like I say, there are a thousand jokes. A thousand.
And we're not making fun of the poor guy that lost a leg.
No, but I hope he's, I mean, what can you do at the end of the day is just look at the funny side of things, right?
Exactly.
You know, look at the bright side of it, as it were. You know, at least he's still
hobbling
there,
around.
Hopping around. could have been worse. Well, as we said, and then after they amputate his leg, like, wouldn't it be a pisser if all of a sudden, bloop, his leg pops out on the other side of the rock?
It was just his body weight holding
just,
in place.
It was just his body weight holding everything in place. But they do say that there was a lot of, like, there's a big force of that river.
Yes.
And you see it in the videos and the
There was bus-sized boulders he was trapped between, and which is not surprising. They couldn't get them apart to pull them out. But and I imagine if they did get into the rocks to move at all, just the water pressure would maybe push them further in.
Further into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gives you the willies thinking about being in that predicament.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a lot of lessons learned with whitewater canoeing and kayaking and stuff. They talk about foot entrapment, because when you go for a swim, white water, they say you should be floating feet downstream and you want to see your toes.
Yeah.
Because if you try and stand on the bottom and get a foot wedged between two rocks, the current is just going to, your foot's going to be there and you're going to levering into the water. The current's going to pull you under and drown you, right?
Yep.
So if you're floating in the water downstream, it's like feet downstream, so you can prepare to hit stuff and keep your toes above the water.
Yep.
You want to see your toes.
And the other thing to take from this is your footwear that you're wearing.
Mm. Yes.
Because he wasn't actually paddling at the time. He was actually scouting out and he slipped off one of the rocks.
Yeah.
Right? And just prepare for everything.
Yeah.
You got nothing else?
I do not.
Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, And you can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Just Google Paddling Adventures Radio and you'll find us. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.